And now to FEMA's National Flood Insurance Program. It's been around since 1968. It's set to expire in December. It's heavily in debt, partly because not enough people buy the flood insurance, so the pot isn't big enough. Of those who do buy and get federal payouts to fix homes, a small percentage are repeatedly flooded and paid, sometimes for more than the property is worth. And that's created the image of the seaside homeowner living off taxpayer generosity and led to debate over extending the program. But yesterday, we spoke with Dean Bixler in Houston. He understands the criticism, even though he's one of those who's been repeatedly flooded and reimbursed.
If I lived along a river or lived along the coast, I would completely agree with him. Unfortunately, ours is a man-made issue because of development on steroids in the area.
You see, Dean didn't know he was in a flood area because maps are outdated, and he's now suing Houston for creating flood risks. Let's bring in Logan Strother. He's a visiting scholar in law and public affairs at Princeton. His piece in the Washington Post argues that flood insurance will help clean up after Hurricanes Irma and Harvey, and that's a problem. He joins us on Skype. Hi, Logan.
Hi, Robin.
Okay, so we'll get to that, why that is a problem. But here we just hear from Dean Bixler, who flood several times. He's one of those people that people get annoyed at. They think that the flood insurance program should not cover people like him who repeatedly get flooded and repeatedly get bailed out. But as he points out, he thinks the fault lies with Houston, which overpaved the city and let developers build in places where they shouldn't, including his house. Is that part of this debate as well, that there are people who don't want to be in a floodplain, they just didn't know they were?
Yeah, so it's certainly true that a lot of people don't understand how much flood risk they face. In much of the country, the risk maps that the National Flood Insurance Program and FEMA use to assess the risk that properties face are out of date. In more than 50% of these maps are more than 15 years old, and another close to 10% are more than 10 years old. In some places, it's simply the case that no one knows how much flood risk properties face.
Right. And what we've been hearing post-Houston, certainly the floodplains are larger than people think. Well, how did we get here? You trace it back to the historic Mississippi River flood of 1927. We've spoken about that on this program. Insurers got out of the market because it was just too risky a bet. There was too much flooding there. Then in 1968, you have Hurricane Betsy hitting the Gulf Coast, 76 people killed, more than $1.5 billion in damage. As you write, that would be $10 billion. In modern day. What happened then?
Well, a lot of people viewed the absence of flood insurance covering this massive liability after Betsy as a market failure. They viewed the lack of private insurers in that business as evidence that the government needed to intervene and to offer flood insurance. In an important sense, though, the fact that flood insurance was prohibitively expensive, or that in many places you couldn't get it at all, was precisely the point. That market condition should have induced people not to move to or not to build in and develop these high-risk areas.
And this is what people are saying today about not extending the National Flood Insurance Program because, as you say, it oddly gives people an incentive to move to areas where they shouldn't move because they know the government will cover them with insurance or help them with disaster relief.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, but there have been attempts over time to change things. Talk about that.
After every major flooding event, there are reform efforts of one kind or another. Very often, these reforms are aimed at increasing market penetration. That is, getting more people to participate in the program so that there is more money in the program and so that the program is then better able to cover losses.
And part of this is requiring flood insurance for some mortgages.
That's right. If you have a mortgage and you're in a flood risk zone, then you are required by law to have flood insurance.
Well, after Hurricane Katrina, Congress passed some reform. It was called the Biggert Waters Act of 2012. It phased out subsidies for properties, eliminated them for these repetitive loss properties, flood after flood. Some of them, I mean, the numbers are astounding. Something like millions has been put into homes that are only worth a couple hundred thousand. It phased that out.
Yeah, that's right. The size of the disaster of Hurricane Katrina essentially made the problem too big to ignore. And that's why they were finally able to get Congress to adopt some of these policies that they've been advocating for a long time.
But then as you write, just 14 months later, Congress passed another law, the Homeowner Flood Insurance Affordability Act of 2014, which pretty much rolled back anything that the Biggert Waters reforms did, revived the subsidies, increased deductibles, things like that. Is this too politically fraught an issue? When you see people whose homes are destroyed on the coast, is it that lawmakers just cannot say no?
It is starting to look that way, yes. It's very hard when you have a program that confers concentrated benefits like this, and the costs are very diffusely borne across all taxpayers, to generate enough interest for a meaningful reform measure, right? Because the people that would gain won't gain very much, not enough that they would even notice. But the people that stand to lose something stand to lose quite a lot, potentially.
Mm. Well, so what happens now? Many of these people are people who have been sold a home by a developer who don't have a clue that it has the problems that it has. Or they've been there for years, propped up by the government since, the mid-60s, rebuilding, and they can't resell. Because who wants to buy a home that's flooded 10 times, on the shore of New Jersey, for instance, to pick one, or Long Island after Sandy?
Sure.
What about that idea of the government, instead of funneling money into these homes, buying them at full value and taking them off the land so the land can absorb water?
That's absolutely something that many people are talking about, particularly for repetitive and severe repetitive loss properties. Government buybacks are one way that we need to be thinking about trying to address these. And in fact, FEMA does have a buyback program. It's pretty small so far, but it's maybe one prong of the way forward.
What are the others?
I think one important one, we're in the process of updating all of our flood risk maps so that hopefully very soon we'll have a much better picture of what flood risk looks like around the country.
Before we hear the next, do you think people are going to be surprised?
I think people will be surprised if they find out about it at all, which leads into my next point, which is I think we need to start talking about flood risk differently. Most people just don't appreciate what a 100-year floodplain means or a 500-year floodplain means. So it's hard for them to assess the risk that they face in those terms. A 100-year floodplain means that there's about a 1% chance that a property is flooded in any given year. That sounds like not a big risk, but if you start talking about these risks in real life terms, I think they make more sense to people. So, for example, if you're buying a house in a 100-year floodplain and you want to take out a 30-year mortgage, there is about a 25% chance that that home will be flooded during the life of the mortgage. So by talking about risk in kind of real life ways instead of in slightly more abstract terms, I think we might be successful in getting people to better appreciate the risk that they face.
Yeah, those are not good odds. What else?
Another thing that we could do is improve our enforcement mechanisms for carrying insurance. It is right now the law that you have to have flood insurance if you have a mortgage and your property is in a flood risk zone. But a lot of properties don't carry that insurance. They always do, of course, when they sign the mortgage. But very often, if you let the insurance lapse, the mortgagor will never know. Or if the mortgage is sold, then the second, the bank that buys the mortgage may not know that that property is supposed to have flood insurance and so forth.
So the requirement's already to buy insurance. But isn't that the problem, that it's that sense of false security? I hear you saying that if more people buy it, then you have more money in the pot, but also more of a delusion about your safety.
No, that's true. Nothing is going to replace smart development. And smarter development isn't going to be possible until we eliminate subsidies, because people, homeowners, business owners, property owners, aren't facing the full risk of their choices. Right? This is a classic moral hazard where people are shielded from the consequences of their actions, and taxpayers pick up the burden. How to do that in real terms is a really hard political question right now. And I think what's likely is that we're just going to kick the can down the road for another 5 years.
That's Logan Strother, a visiting scholar in law and public affairs at Princeton. Logan, we'll post your writing at herenow.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Robin.